One thing that Australians are really good at is pulling your leg or having little obscure things which are good for a joke. Language play has been around forever. This is interesting stuff because it's a complete self-contained area of English.
The ABC's Word Wizard. The Lord of Language. Professor Rowley Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.
Rowley Sussex is here, your regular guest to explain language to you. Hello, Rowley.
Good evening. It's been a while, Ashwin.
It has been many years. Have you changed linguistically in those years, picked up a bit more Polish or anything in the years?
I've started learning Chinese, which is killing me because it's a totally different experience.
What's the biggest challenge of learning Chinese?
I think visually the characters, because I've got an auditory memory. You know, if I hear something, it'll stick.
Right.
But seeing things is not the same. And, you know, in China, there are characters with over 40 strokes and you've got to do them in the right order. Most of them are not like that at all.
Okay.
But there's that. And I think also that the grammar is actually not too bad.
I heard the grammar's simple. The tones are complicated.
That's right. And, Mandarin's got 4. Cantonese has got 9.
Hmm.
And in addition to that, the way they put characters together to make a big word. So the word for a teacher is shi, and the normal way of referring to a teacher is lao shi, which is an old teacher, meaning venerable teacher. So in China, I would be Lao Shi Sussex.
Right, okay.
And I like venerable, you know, because in our culture, old is such a bad word.
Yes. That is the beauty of the respect for the elders coming out in the language.
That's right.
So, I like that. You know, language is culture as well. But what would you like to talk about today, tonight, Rowley?
I want to talk about playing with language because one thing that Australians are really good at is pulling your leg or having little obscure things which are good for a joke. And there are some – this is very, very old. You know, language play has been around forever. And the first thing I wanted to look at was avoidance language. Now, there's another sort of avoidance language I better mention, which is in some Australian indigenous languages, you may not talk about a certain, particularly your mother-in-law. They're called mother-in-law languages. And when you're in her presence or talking about her, you've got to use different words. And it is unbelievably complicated. We'll talk about that another day because it is very, very different. The avoidance language I wanted to mention before we get on to rhyming slang, and we will be asking listeners for their versions of rhyming slang as well, is if one of your children asks you something and you don't want to give a straight answer, you know, what's for dinner? A wigwam for a goose's bridle. And this is an odd thing because geese don't have bridles anyway. And what's a wigwam doing in there, which is a North American residence?
Right.
It was originally a wimwam. And a wimwam was a dialectal word, I think Scottish, for something fanciful. So the whole phrase is totally impossible. You know, a made-up thing for a goose's bridle, which is another made-up thing. And basically you're saying to your child, either I don't know, I don't want to tell you, or go away and do something else. But this one, you know, the wimwam was the origin. We presumably misheard it and put in the wigwam, because that was the nearest thing we knew.
That's right, because we didn't have much of an American influence coming in our formative years, did we?
No. Well, except that some of the first ships through the heads in Port Jackson were American ships selling rum.
Hmm.
And in those days, rum was currency. You could make a lot of money with it. But no, you're right. It was a long time before until the gold rush, I think, because the California gold rush, our gold rush in 1851, there was a lot of influx of Americans after that. Another one, which is, where's something and you don't know, a common reply is up in auntie's room behind the clock. This is, again... Auntie may not have a clock at all, but no, this is, oddly enough, there is another version from Yorkshire, up in Annie's room rather than Auntie's room, or up in Granny's room behind the clock. So now, obviously these things have been heard or misheard and passed on to another generation. I have a lovely book at home called Cinderella Dressed in Yellow, which is a list of children's nursery rhymes and their different forms in different places.
Where did we get this tradition from? Can you trace it to a particular part of England?
No, I think it's all over British dialect. Just as, you know, Cinderella Dressed in Yellow was originally a book by people called Opie about the nursery rhymes in Britain. But I've got a variation on Auntie's Room from Ireland. This is in Munster in the south of Ireland. Instead of saying up in Auntie's Room behind the clock, they used to say up in Nellie's Room behind the wallpaper.
Up in Nellie's Room, but it's so obscure they're becoming now as well.
Well, I think the idea is... whatever it is you want to know, you're not going to get the answer.
Right, okay.
From me.
It's the impossible challenge for the child.
That's right. But again, there are various times, you know, where do babies come from and so on, and there are all sorts of stories about cabbages and what have you.
Yes.
Things which parents use to avoid, well, they don't want to be actually deceitful. On the other hand, they don't want to give a straight answer. And so you give something which appears to be meaningful. And the poor old child has to go away and work it out.
Okay, so that buys you some time as a parent.
That's right, yes.
These phrases, the use of this colourful language, do you think there's a class issue? Is this more common with working class Brits historically than the aristocrats and the upper class? Would they be so playful and flippant with language?
Ooh, there's certainly an age factor, because these things are now very little used by the younger generation. And if you use them to the younger generation, a lot of them say, what's that? You know, sort of,
yes.
Are you trying to avoid talking to me or something?
Right.
They know what it's all about. So I think a lot of these avoidance things are, in fact, a generational one. I have no idea about the class distinctions.
Yes.
Which will be interesting. When we get to rhyming slang, however, that's a different thing. Rhyming slang. In the earlier days in London, it was not too far, not so long ago, actually, there was no police force. And Sir Robert Peel set up the first police force, and the policemen were called Peelers after him. And the small-time crooks in the East End of London wanted to be able to talk to each other without the policeman understanding. And so they invented this sort of thieves' language, which was a way of talking English and appearing, again, once appearing to say something, whereas in fact it was saying something entirely different. And then there were things like apples and pears for the stairs and trouble and strife for the wife, which one would not approve nowadays. But these became absolutely standard in Cockney usage. We got it when the convicts first arrived here in 1788. And apparently there was a small group of Australian hoods who went to Chicago about 1920 to join the Cosa Nostra. And there was apparently a little pocket of rhyming slang in Chicago. Other than that, right. It's not known in America at all. That's a use of language which never quite took root.
So would they have to have done it in Italian in New York or?
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
I would have thought so.
Right.
In that particular lot, so Al Capone and co, I would guess so.
That's interesting. And this sort of comes back to, and I've touched on this class issue before, I feel like rhyming slang is, it's Jack, not Rose on the Titanic. It's the lads, it's the boys.
Okay. I think you're probably right, because it certainly in its origin was, you know, the small-time criminals in the East End of London in the markets and so on. But it really has interesting flow-ons into our modern language, because something like rabbit and pork, right, now you're looking for a word which rhymes with pork, which is a common word which you can guess. And rabbit and pork is, in fact, talk. Okay, but then it goes one step further and we take away the rhyming word, which is pork, which you're left with rabbit. But then you get a new word, which is, what are you rabbiting on about?
Right, okay.
And that's where it comes.
That makes more sense, because rabbits aren't known for being particularly talkative.
No. But in this particular case, there's a pattern where you take away the rhyming word. You know, for example, Barry Crocker. Now, Crocker rhymes with shocker. Mm. And you can say, I've had a Barry Crocker of a day. Right. But then what you do is you take away the rhyming bit, Crocker, and you're just left with Barry. And you say, oh, I've had a Barry of a day.
Right.
And the people who know how to unpack it, which are basically Australians, will be fine. But people from overseas will not. And this, again, it's a little bit concealing, a little bit playing. It's a little bit like, if I hide this one, can you work out what it means? I better go and put on my bags of fruit for a suit. Now, I have a friend who's about my age who speaks in this type of register all the time. He never, ever says, I've got to go and have a, take my fruit suit to the dry cleaners or whatever, is always a bag of fruit. And it becomes a kind of in-group speak. You use it with your friends, and if you don't use them, then it sounds a little bit strange. There are, by the way, some which are a little vulgar.
Yes.
And our producer will be jumping on those and making sure they don't go to air. But if you've got other ones which are okay, we'd love to hear from you, because things like Britney Spears gives you beers. All right. And again, if you think about it, or you know, Germaine Greer for beer as well, Oxford Scholar for a dollar, give us a butcher's hook, or give us a butcher's, meaning give us a look. After a while, you start thinking, oh, yeah, these make sense. They are very much a spoken language. You don't, we wouldn't write them very much. But I think this is interesting stuff, because it's a complete sort of self-contained area of English, which is very creative. We've got some quite recent ones. And there's an old ones like steak and kidney for Sydney, you know. People know that.
We'll just take a call from Mike, who's rung in from Redland City. Hello, Mike.
Hey, mate. How you going?
Good. What's your question this evening?
I've got some sayings for Rolly.
Go on.
Dressed up like a pox doctor's clerk.
Oh, yes. That one is dates from the 1920s. No one has ever been able to explain why a pox doctor's clerk should have been so well dressed. But it's a very, very common phrase. Again, I haven't heard it from younger people, and I haven't heard the phrase itself until now for about 30-something years. So thanks for reminding me. What else have you got?
I'm 70 now, and I was brought up by my grandparents, so I heard about that a lot.
Yes.
And the other one was a cockatoo.
Go on.
A cockatoo, he was in Mount Isa in the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have a bloke at one end of the street, another guy at the other end of the street where they were playing two up.
Yes.
And if the police were coming, they'd yell out. Okay. And then they'd all scarper.
Okay. Scarper, by the way, is another good Cockney word. And there's a scarper flow thing. That's another story. But the cockatoo was the person who was on guard, really, was he, to warn them about the cops?
Yeah, they had one end, one the other, and as soon as they yelled out, they were nicked off.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And that's one I never knew. I didn't either know that it was in Isa, which is even more, because we can pin this one down quite accurately.
Thank you for calling in with that one, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Rolly, now you're learning Chinese at the moment. You've learned other languages in the past. Mm. English has such a large vocabulary. Is this something that's more unique to English, to be so playful with rhymes?
I think the fact of English nowadays is that it's a world language, and it is possibly spoken by over 2 billion people. We just don't know. But let's say you go to India, everybody... Let's say they come from North India and they don't come from a Hindi-speaking area.
Yeah.
They will have English and Hindi, which is the national language, and their local language as well.
And they've got their unique Indian English. They often say, kindly revert.
That's right.
Kindly revert. And we don't say that very often.
Well, the only people who say revert in Australia are lawyers. I will revert to you.
Right.
I will get back to you. I'll reply.
That makes sense, because the English speakers in India were the elites in the 50s and before. They were part of the colonial administration. So they picked up the lawyerly language.
Very much so.
Right.
And various bits like things like Dobie Waller.
Yes.
Someone who does your washing.
Yes.
From Indian English have taken root. Again, they were, I think, probably before the Second World War, they were getting already a little bit less common and are now virtually unknown. It's sort of Rudyard Kipling type of thing.
I think so. And you might see a bit more of this because Ed Sheeran was in India now, and he was doing a collaboration with a local Punjabi artist. So there's more collaborations between East and West, and as India and other Asian countries rise economically, you'll see more of this fusion of languages, I think. So the Dobie Waller could make a return.
Yeah, well, and again, you get all sorts of words. Cummerbund.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what you wear around your middle with a black tie dress, but that comes actually from Persian originally via Urdu.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure that the word veranda comes to us from Hindi.
I always thought veranda was Hindi. Someone called up yesterday to say it was a Portuguese implant into India, but I thought it was a Hindi word.
I think it's originally Hindi, veranda, and the Portuguese is certainly veranda as well.
Might have gone the other way from their time in Goa.
Could have been, actually, because Portuguese was established in that little enclave on the west of India.
Yeah, that's right.
And give some words. But the various other words, Indian has been quite a good contributor. From my point of view, I think there are, there's Chinglish in China, there's Japanese in Japan, there's Singlish in Singapore, there's Manglish in Malaysia.
Hinglish in India.
Yes, and wherever you go, the English that you find has taken on some of the properties of the local language. And there's one that I really love in Indian English, which it'd be very useful. You can postpone something here, but in India you can prepone it as well. In other words, instead of putting it off, you bring it forward.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, that is so elegant. It's using bits which are already in English, if you like, waiting to make a word.
Yes.
And yet it hasn't yet taken root anywhere else outside the subcontinent, as far as I know.
The Indian language is typically, it's very easy to make the opposite. You add A in front of it. The negation is very clear and simple.
Yes.
So that's why they would do prepone, postpone, because they're so used to doing
A
very clear negation. So Ron has called in from Majors Creek in North Queensland. Hello, Ron.
G'day, how are you?
I'm good. What's your question for Raleigh tonight?
Hi, Raleigh. I've been really wanting to ask you this question for quite some time.
Go ahead.
I don't understand the expression all but expected or all but certain.
Mm-hmm.
But how does that come about?
Okay. This is basically all except. But was in an older usage meant except as well. So all except something else, All but the last of the people through the gate were actually, they paid for their tickets or whatever. So everyone except. So it's an old use of English which has persisted, I think, only in that meaning in the phrase all but.
Thank you for calling in, Ron, with those questions. Ian has rung in from Redcliffe. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Ashwin. Hello,
there.
Professor.
Mm.
Just wondering, I do quite a number of online quizzes of a day.
Yes.
And some of the questions are, which word of four has the most vowels in it?
Mm.
And then in brackets they have, not including Y for Yankee. And I'm just wondering whether the Americans or someone are including the letter Y as a vowel now.
Ah, yeah. The story is that Y can be either a consonant or a vowel, depending on where it is in a word. So if it's after a consonant like B-Y, right, it has to be a vowel because that's the only thing that can actually carry the syllable, right? On the other hand, if it's in front of a vowel like yes, that y is a consonant. So Y can do either. It's one of these things which is a bit of a chameleon.
Flexi word.
Yeah.
Ian, thank you for calling in. Rolly, as we wrap up, do you have anything final to say or should we go to your word of the day?
Well, I'd like to invite the listeners to have a look under rhyming slang, particularly Australia, on the web. You'll find things like Aristotle, which is bottle, of course, and Babbling Brook, which is a cook. And these have been around since the 1920s, 1930s. They're really, really quite old. Froth and bubble for trouble. Frog and toad for the road. Philip Adams is very fond of that. Dog and bone for the phone. But again, as technology changes, some of these things, I'm afraid, have just fallen out of use. However, you want my last word. Okay, Claire Booth Luce was an American ambassador and a very distinguished lady, and she was trying to work out with Dorothy Parker, who was a comedian, who was going to go first through the door. And Claire Booth said to Dorothy Parker, "Age before beauty." Ooh. And Dorothy Parker said, no, dear, I shall go before. Pearls before swine."
Back to the swines. Thank you for coming in, Rolly Sussex.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Raleigh Sussex, a podcast from ABC Radio Brisbane, every week on the ABC Listen app.